is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Hi, guys. Hi, how's everybody doing? Welcome to September. I think this is our first show in September. Our last one was on the 31st of August, I believe. So far, for the last several months, what we've been doing is going through the alphabet, A to Z, and going over an issue in for each letter of the alphabet. So we're on H's. We've done hives. I can't think we did anything else. But I said today we would focus on health. It starts with H. Sounds like a really good thing to focus on. A few weeks ago, somebody sent in, I don't remember who, question asking about what the indicators of health were. So I thought that was a really good question. I love that question. I like a lot of questions, but I particularly like that one. How do you know you're in good health? So I thought, well, what we would do today is we'll look at all the systems of the body. So I'm going to go through and just quickly define each system. And then we'll look over what are indicators of health for each system. Okay? So this is, when we go over the definitions, I'm going to go over the broad spectrum, easy to understand. Definitely not an exhaustive list. It's a short list of issues, definition for each system in the body. And we're not doing them in order of priority, because everyone can argue differently for which is the order of priority. So I just thought we'll just do them in alphabetical order. Okay? So let's start with the cardiovascular system. Obviously, it involves the heart and your vascular vessels, arteries and veins. What does it do? It transports oxygen, nutrients, and hormones throughout the body, while it picks up things like carbon dioxide, cellular waste, and other toxins, transporting them to the liver and then to the kidneys or the gut. Obviously, the carbon dioxide to the lungs to exchange it for oxygen. The digestive system, well, that goes right from the mouth down to the rectum. Now, think about it. When you go in the digestive tract, you're actually outside of the body. So it's like a long tunnel that moves from the mouth right down to the rectum. But once you go into that tunnel, you're outside the body. But what does it do? Well, from mechanical, chemical, and probiotics or microbiota, it degrades your food to prepare it for transportation either into the body or elimination out of the body through the stools. There's an awful lot that goes on in there with all your different, your three categories of enzymes, your lipases, amylases, and proteases, the hydrochloric acid, the microbiota, 70% of your immune system. The digestive path is an incredibly complex path. The endocrine system, well, they're all incredibly complex. The endocrine system is your production and secretion of hormones that regulate a wide variety of bodily functions, including the menstrual cycle, blood glucose levels, your blood pressure, satiation, and hunger. What does it include? The hypothalamus, the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, the thyroid and parathyroid, your thymus, your adrenal glands, pancreas, ovaries, and testicles. Now, actually, some people will say include the liver as well, because the liver actually does produce hormones as well. Your immune system, actually, I got these two backwards in alphabetical order. I've got the immune system first. It defends the body against pathogens, includes both the lymphatic system with all the nodes and glands, as well as the inflammatory system. Now, remember, 70% of your immune system is in, actually 72%, but is in the gut. Actually, with some variables, it's up to 90% is in the gut. Now, your immune system does go throughout the body and it actually includes your lymphatic system, but we'll identify the lymphatic separately. Hepatic, I put in another. Hepatic isn't typically recognized as one of the bodily systems. It's an organ in and of itself. The reason I listed it here is it is the largest organ in the body, as we've said so many times. It does over 500 functions and supports all other systems and organs in the body. It includes the gallbladder here. And any infection, inflammation, or other issues can affect its ability to function effectively. We've also talked many times about how as much as every cell in the body has glutathione, the liver has the highest concentration of glutathione. And certainly one of the most commonly recognized functions that it does is regulate the toxins, helps to detox the body. In fact, it's often referred to as the detox organ. Remember, every cell of the body does its detoxification, but the liver is your major detox organ. Okay, inflammatory system, that includes your physical protection, includes the skin, the hair, the nails, the glands of the body. It's involved in immune defense. It's your number one defense in terms of your atmosphere. Sensory perception, vitamin synthesis, of course, your D3, you're all familiar with that. Temperature regulation, water excretion, think of your sweat glands. It also detoxes through the sweat glands and eliminates a variety of things, actually, through the sweat glands. Your lymphatic system, yes, it's part of the immune system. It's a collection of tissues, vessels, and organs that work together to move and or prepare toxins for removal, fluids to move from the cells into the vascular. That process, in that sense, it's considered a drainage filtering system. It drains excess fluids, it absorbs fats from the digestive tract, and again, it's part of the immune system. And the musculoskeletal, obviously your mechanical, structural, postural support for both position and locomotion. Your nervous system includes both the parasympathetic and the sympathetic, the peripheral nervous system and the central nervous system. It's the initiation and regulation of umpteen different vital body functions, sensation, and movement. Reproductive, obviously the reproduction process in all of us, whether it's to do with the sperm in the male or the ovaries and the whole reproductive tract in the female. The respiratory exchange predominantly of oxygen for carbon dioxide in the between the lungs and the air, and the acid balance regulation, getting rid of the carbon dioxide out of the body, because if we keep it in the body, if you can't breathe it out, like say with emphysema, your blood becomes very acidic, and that is very fatal. Very fatal. That's a redundant term. Urinary, obviously filtering the blood through the kidneys and the reuptake of necessary nutrients through the tube that goes from the kidneys to the bladder, and including creating the urine that obviously goes out through the bladder. Okay, so now we've looked at the different systems. We're going to look at what are good indicators. So we're going to start off, rather than with the systems, we're going to start off with looking at some real general, the three most basic, if you want, tools, indicators of health. Sleep. Easy to go to sleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling refreshed and ready to go. Very good indicator of health. Your energy, having good energy throughout the day and starting feeling tired by the end of the day. Good energy production. Stools, one thing that we're not really taught to look at in Western society, and yet your stools tell you a tremendous thing about both your gut health, your liver, and your gallbladder health. So you should have in typical protocol for naturopathic medicine, you should have one stool today for every meal you had yesterday. Now, that doesn't mean breaking down into pieces. That means you go to the bathroom three times today to remove a stool if you had three meals yesterday. They should be approximately 9 inches long. They should be medium to dark brown. They should have the texture of a good, healthy banana. And they should be easy to come out with, leaving nothing behind to wipe. Okay? So that's three real general. Actually, I could have put in there appetite, and I'm going to do that right now. Your appetite should be good and healthy. We often look at appetite, again, as an indicator of good health. So that really should be in there. It's not on the sheet, but I will send an update to Nicole. Okay, let's go and do now each of the individual systems. We'll start with the cardiovascular system. You should have good blood pressure, about 120 over 80. You should not be an SOB, meaning shortness of breath. There should be no blood clotting, no angina, no swelling in the feet. Your digestive, aka your GI tract or your gut, there should be no bloating or gassy issues, no inflammatory issues, no cramping, etc. You should have good oral health. You should have a smooth texture, lack of bad breath, no pink in the sink when you brush your teeth, and you can consume cold and hot water with or foods without issue. The GI itself, the gut part, there should be no bloating or gassy issues, no inflammatory issues, no cramping issues. With regard to the stool, like I said, you should have one movement for each meal you had yesterday. They should be move out easily, neither too quick nor too slow. They should be 9 to 12 inches long with about 60% bacteria, medium to dark brown. They should be a sinker, and they should have the texture of a good healthy banana. Okay, let's move on to the endocrine system. There should not be any hormonal issues, whether with diabetes, adrenal issues, thyroid issues, reproduction, sexual function, growth and development issues, the hepatic, the liver. No non-alcoholic fatty liver disorder. Now, note that about 30% of the population have a non-alcoholic fatty liver disorder by the time they're 30. And that doesn't matter whether you're vegetarian, whether you're vegan, whether you're paleo, Mediterranean, doesn't matter what kind of diet. So be very, very careful of that, because that can have a really big issue impact on those 500 different functions that the liver does. There shouldn't be any inflammation or infection, so you shouldn't have HIV or AIDS or hepatitis or jaundice. There shouldn't be drug, alcohol, or chemical overload. No blockages of any of the ducts, no issues with the gallbladder or gallstones. Immune system, to have a healthy immune system, you shouldn't have any autoimmune disorders, golly gee whiz. Issues that involve autoimmune disorders are like type 1 diabetes or lupus or HIV or AIDS or overactive system like asthma, eczema, allergies, arthritis, or inflammatory issues. You should have a good bout of flu once every 2 to 3 years and get over it quickly. That gives the immune system a good, healthy workout. There should be no rashes, and you should heal quickly. All right. Again, the integumentary system, the beautiful skin, hair, and nails. So with the skin, there should be a healthy tone. It should be hydrated and supple, good flexibility, good response, no burning, itching, or stretching, no skin rashes like psoriasis or eczema, no fungal infections, no keloid scarring. With your nails, you can even look at the nails, no ridges, either horizontally or vertically, no white spots. They don't peel and they don't break. Your hair should be full and lustrous, not brittle, dry, or frizzy. It shouldn't be too oily or too dry. It should grow regularly, which is about 6 inches per year, although there is variation on that. Okay, let's go on to the lymphatic. No swollen lymph nodes, no swelling or accumulation of fluids, no tonsils or appendix issues. And that's it. I'm trying to think. There's got to be some other things to the lymphatic, but I can't think of anything off the top. Okay, your musculoskeletal. It should be in good condition. You should have a good sense of balance, so no dizziness, no vertigo. You should have a good sense of where you are in time and space. There shouldn't be any tinnitus or carpal tunnel syndrome, arthritic conditions, whether it be osteo or rheumatoid or fibromyalgia, no osteoporosis. Nervous system. Well, there's a lot of different components to the nervous system. Let's start with the cognitive. You should have a clear mind. It should be easy to make decisions. You should have a good ability to focus your attention. You should have good recall. I don't want to say I have phenomenal memory. I just have lousy recall. Okay, we all have different learning capacities, whether you learn through watching, through visual, with hands-on, et cetera, auditory. So I won't even go there, just as long as you have the capacity to learn. You have a good problem-solving capacity, critical thinking, abstract reasoning. Those are all parts of good upper cognitive management skills. No repetitive thinking like someone who has OCD. You don't need to go over things over and over and over and over and over again. You deal with them and let them go. There's no Alzheimer's I didn't put that in, but apparently there's 119 different dementias being researched in today's world. So no Alzheimer's actually means no dementia of any kind. I should put that in. Or other dementias. Emotional. You should have a good, strong, healthy emotional system, which means you can go into and experience any of the emotions appropriately, get over them quickly. Again, you don't want to get stuck in them. You want to be able to experience them, release them, let them go. Now, sensory usually has to do with the brain as well. So let's look at eyesight. You should have good 20/20 vision. You shouldn't need glasses for reading or distancing. There should be no double vision, no blurred visions. I could also put in no cataracts or macular. Hearing. Good, healthy hearing, no tinnitus, no earaches or infections. We often laugh and say, but do you have husband hearing or male hearing? Which means you filter out an awful lot of things. Okay, the olfactory system, a good sense of smell. You don't want to be smelling things that aren't there and that you can differentiate between smells. Taste. You have all the taste capacity, sweet, sour, tart, salty, bitter, savory, without issue. Now, in terms of structural, you have no brain or spinal cord injuries, Bell's palsy, or neuropathies. In terms of functional, there's no seizures, no dizziness, no headaches, neuralgias, and no degenerative disorders like Parkinson's and MS. Reproductive. Well, if you're male, you want to have good sperm count and no prostate issues. If you're female, you want to have a good regular cycle, the ability to get pregnant. You don't bleed too much or too little. And the period should last anywhere between 30 to 7 days and should occur about 28-day cycles. Men actually do have a cycle as well, but it's around 40 to 45 days as opposed to 28 days, and they don't have the physical component to it that the females have, obviously. Respiratory, you got good, healthy breathing, and again, no SOB, no shortness of breath. There's no coughing or wheezing, asthma, bronchitis, COPD, emphysema, cystic fibrosis. Those are the most common issues with the respiratory system, and if you have good, healthy lungs, that won't be an issue. The urinary system. The urine should be darker in the AM than throughout the day. If you take anything that has a riboflavin or vitamin B2, you'll have more yellow in your urine. Riboflavin actually means, flavin means yellow. No leakage. You don't have difficulty starting or stopping. There's a constant easy flow. There's no infections, no kidney stones or pain. So the bottom line is if you walk through all the systems in the body and they are healthy and effective and functional without issue, then you are in good health. How do you achieve that? Well, you think healthy, you eat, you exercise regularly, you sleep well, you be kind and patient, and have a good sense of humor. Don't forget, laughter is the best medicine. So that gives you an overall understanding of each of the different systems in the body. And, of course, each one can be broken down even further if you're into research or if you're a practitioner, health practitioner. But those are the very general systems in the body, and those are indicators of good health. So hopefully you're able to walk through that. If not, Nicole has posted the article, and you can make sure that you are all in good health. That's it for the H's. Okay, let's go to questions. I don't have time to go through everything today. Holy cow. Okay. So, Nicole only sent me 3 questions today, I think. Yeah. Okay, let's start with Sandra in California. If someone overcame cancer, what are the odds of getting it again? Well, that is a huge, varied answer. So let's just give you some ideas here. Think about it. You make about 1 million counts or cells a day. If your immune system has been shot up with chemotherapy, which typically destroys your immune system, you need to rebuild your system. If you don't rebuild your immune system, you're going to get cancer again. Real easy. The chances are very high. If you had surgery, they say, oh, you know, we got all the cancer. What they mean is they got the tumor. But tumors in short periods replicate fast, and then they go into a maintenance period or a resting period. And during that resting or latent period, maintenance period, whatever you want to call it, they release enough, the tumor releases a lot of cells into the carcinogenic cells into the body. Well, if those are still floating around and your immune system has been shot, obviously you got cancer in the first place, so typically the immune system wasn't as healthy as it could have been, then you're likely to get cancer again. So the key is to find out how and why, what kind of cancer you had and why did you get it? Now, very often they'll say, well, we don't know, because they're not trained to look at the whys. They're only trained to manage the symptoms. So you need, it's better, to, in my mind, if you understand why you got cancer. Very often, the answer has to do, like about 90% of the time, with your immune system. So you need to look at, well, why was your immune system depleted or compromised? You need to rebuild it. This is where glutathione, which regulates your immune system and most of your immune cells, transfer factor that we've talked about so often, in effect, reprograms your immune system. So those are, and then of course we've talked so often about prebiotics and probiotics. So those are four key components that are important to your immune system, your glutathione, your transfer factor, your pre and probiotics. They're all hugely interactive, hugely interdynamic. So make sure that you function well, effectively, in making sure your immune system is working to its optimal capacity so that you don't get cancer again. Having said that, I've shared this story before. 40-plus years ago, I did have cancer. I had a ovarian tumor the size of a hardball. Fortunately, I went to an osteopath, naturopath, Dr. Loeffler. He's now crossed over. He was in his 70s or 80s at the time, I forget. But he put me on a betalain diet. 3.5 weeks later, they couldn't find the tumor. A year ago, January, I had a brain tumor. It took me till June, but I got rid of it. Not doing a whole lot, just doing what the basics were I needed to do and got rid of it. So I had cancer again, but it was 42 years later and different type of cancer. And we got rid of it as well. Okay, Michelle in New York. I have constant kidney infections, and at what point should I get tested for disease in the kidneys? Well, there's a number of issues that could be causing kidney infections. And number one, of course, is your immune system, which we've just been talking about. So are you building your immune system up? Now, think about it. Your immune system, 70 to 90%, depending on the variable, is in the gut. But pathogenic stuff, toxic stuff, et cetera, can move very easily from the gut into the kidneys, okay? So we need to make sure that we are building our immune system. We're getting sufficient glutathione, sufficient transfer factor. Iron can be important to the kidneys. You can have high uremic toxins that may be caused by the microbiota in your gut. Foods you eat that are high in phosphate or oxalates can become toxins. So those would be like sodas and food additives. They're a big source of phosphate. It's not associated with protein content. Too much choline. Now, typically we want the choline not only because it converts to B9 if we're short in B9, but it can also be used for other things in the body. And I'm forever getting people to eat fresh eggs off the farm, but sometimes you can get too much choline. So there's an article you can look up. It's called Nutrients Turned into Toxins, Microbiota Modulation of Nutrient Properties in Chronic Kidney Disease. It was produced in May of 2017 in a journal called Nutrients. And it goes over all kinds of nutrients that the microbiota modulation of nutrient properties can affect different things in the kidney and cause chronic kidney disorders. So you might want to be aware of that. You might want to look at that article. I think there's about 15 items. Nutrients turned into toxins. Microbiota modulation of nutrient properties in chronic kidney disease. Okay, very, very good article for anyone who has chronic kidney infections to be reading that article and see if, how much of it applies to you. All right. Now, let's see. Next one. Lori in Connecticut. I suspect my thyroid is out of whack. What can I do? I'm gaining weight like crazy even though I am dieting. Well, number one, it doesn't have to do with your thyroid at all, usually. We've talked about this many times, so I'm just going to go over a brief summary of it. As most of you know, your thyroid produces the hormones T4 and T3, four times as much T4 as T3, and it's converted as per needed because your T3 is very powerful. Now, number one, that process, about 80% of the T4, T3 conversion happens in the liver. If there's any issue with the liver, remember the liver does over 500 functions. If there's any issue with the liver, it can affect that process, that conversion process. And if there's any issue with the adrenals, either hypo or hyperactive, they can interfere, the cortisol can interfere with the deiodinases, which are the enzymes that do the conversion. So typically, as much as people often think it's hypothyroid, doctors often interpret it as hypothyroid, it's not. It's the liver and or the adrenals. The adrenals are hugely involved in putting on weight as well. And so if you're gaining weight, I would certainly be looking at the adrenal glands, but also the liver. Okay. If we go back about 20 years ago when we believed that the WHO, the World Health Organization, was actually evidence-based and not politically and financially driven, the WHO said that about 80% of women who were on Synthroid should not be on Synthroid. It causes RTH syndrome. And that's because, as I said, most of the conversion happens in the liver and can be affected by either liver functioning and or adrenal functioning. Okay? So be very, very careful, all those who are on Synthroid. You might want to go and find out how your liver and adrenals are doing and can you help support your adrenal and or liver so that you're producing, converting sufficient T4 to T3 and get off that Synthroid. What happens if you don't need the Synthroid and they put you on it and you get RT3 syndrome, then what happens is, unless you know how to get off of it and how to get the body to do what it needs to do, you'll be on Synthroid for the rest of your life. Okay, I don't like people being on medication, even nutrients, for the rest of their life. I want you to get as much as you can out of your food, not out of pills, for a couple of different reasons. Number one, that's how we were designed. And number two, when you take a nutrient in a whole food, so even like a herbal tincture, I love herbal tinctures because of that, a whole food structure, you're not only getting the particular compound that you might be low in, but you're getting all the enzymes, the fibers, the omega-3s, the vitamins, the minerals, all the different types of polyphenols and other phytonutrients to help you to digest and absorb and metabolize that food. So for me, when you take a whole product, again, I love herbal tinctures for that. They're incredibly nutrient dense. So the rule of thumb is that they're one tablespoon of herbal tincture is equivalent to 4 to 6 pills. And one of the reasons for that is because you're getting all the nutrient density out of the herb, whether you're using the root, the leaf, the flower, what have you. I'll tell you up front, that is a bias of mine. Okay? All right, I think that's it for the questions. Kidney infections and thyroid. All righty. Okay, part we're going to go to is the garden. All righty. Now, we have a big thing here with the garden today. Think about how often we've talked about even giving you various formulations to do with protecting all your vegetation from pesticides, right? whether they be in the air, whether they be in the ground, you know, whether they be moths or whatever. We've got 101 different types of natural, we don't have 101, I think I have 14, I should exaggerate like that. I think I've given out about 14 different natural formulas you can make in the kitchen to protect your plants against fungus and insects and things that you might find in the soil itself. We've often talked about how neem is the number one internationally recognized herb for plant protection. It's incredibly nutrient dense. It supports the plant's immune system and helps as an antimicrobial as well. So not only for us, but for plants as well. But there's another problem we have, and that's what's in the actual atmosphere. Now, whether you believe in chemtrails or not, whether you believe in all the different stories about what chemicals, heavy metals, toxins, et cetera, are in those chemtrails, or whether you just simply recognize that our air is a heck of a lot more pollutant than it used to be, doesn't matter. Either way, we need to protect our plants from that atmosphere. Plants, you know, we know they absorb everything they can from the sun. They absorb everything from the atmosphere. They absorb everything from the soil and from the rain. And they provide us with an incredible food supply doing that. So we're greatly appreciative of that. So as opposed to the formulations, I'm trying to think, the best ones I know of are the neem, the garlic, and the cayenne and the soap. Those four components are huge when making up your own natural insecticides, pesticides, herbicides, etc. But we can also use plants. Remember how we've talked about companion growing, and we've talked so many times about what plants resist, what kind of pathogens in the atmosphere? Well, we also have plants that absorb pollutants, the actual air pollutants. And that is phenomenal. Again, using nature to work with nature. There, if you ever want to watch it, there's a movie on Netflix, I believe it was. And it's something like The Biggest Little Garden. And they've taken this acreage that they bought without realizing it was basically sage and sandbrush. They brought in this really wise Mexican agriculturalist of some sort. I don't know what his background was, but he has this incredible capacity to turn the sand and sagebrush into a phenomenal garden, and he uses nature to work with nature, and they come up with issue after issue, or challenge after challenge after challenge, and he has a natural way of dealing with all their challenges. I just loved him. My dad went, oh my God, I could never handle doing all that, and I'm going, holy cow, that is so phenomenal. I would love to be able to do that, take an acreage of parched soil and turn it into this incredible garden that's producing so much, using nature itself, protecting it from wildlife, protecting it from pathogens, insecticides, protecting it from all the different things that can harm it by using nature itself. Nothing artificial. It's all nature. It's beautiful if you ever want to watch it. Biggest Little Farm, I think is what it was called. I watched it twice. Loved it. Okay, put in your garden. And one of the things is lady's mantle. Now, lady's mantle is also a really great herb for our health, but in terms of our garden, it's great for trapping or responding to air pollution. Okay, and it provides pollen and nectar for pollinating insects. The leaves are phenomenal. They have, like many leaves do, a hairy kind of leaf that traps particulates from the atmosphere. These plants can reduce particulates up to 60% and nitrogen oxide by up to 40%. That's phenomenal. That's lady's mantle. So you always want to have some lady's mantle in your garden. And if you get into herbal medicine, you want lady's mantle for whole other purposes. Okay, there's another one called Juneberry. Now, when Nicole posts these, I've given you the technical term, the Latin term, but I'm just going to work with the common terms as much as possible. The Juneberry collection of plants, they can be found in community gardens because they clean air. You're actually in the City of London. I thought that was interesting. Now, trees such as the Juneberry tree can mitigate pollutants such as the particulates and, again, nitrous dioxide, as long as the canopies do not trap pollution at street level. Okay? Juneberry is another species that is particularly good for wildlife, providing berries, pollen, and nectar for birds and insects. So a juneberry is just one. I have a number of different plants, like your lavender. I'm trying to think of the two other ones. I can't think of what they're called. One is a beautiful deep red burgundy plant. I got two of the three different plants that I have in the yard. Names just escape me. And what they're there for is predominantly to attract the bees so that the bees pollinate. And then I get the bees from the nursery every February. I bring in new bees, and I have the structures for the mason bees. The mason bees are 10 times better than your honeybees at pollinating. So you always want to go in the early spring, late winter, and get your pollinating mason bees. Have the housing, because you will find that some of them actually, and if you've got the clay for them, they will house themselves as they hibernate over the winter in your housing structure. So I do have those, and every year I find more and more have housed themselves in my structure, but I still go and buy more because they're important. All right, let's go to the aster family. It's a broad family, and some plants can take up metals from the soil, heavy metal toxicity. It's one of the plants that absorbs metals such as lead, selenium, cadmium, and other soil pollutants. That is awesome. And a lot of people talk about various heavy chemicals, heavy metal toxicities in the atmosphere. So that would be a really good one if you believe that there's heavy metal toxins in the atmosphere. They're particularly sensitive to ozone and will demonstrate the presence of this pollutant through yellowing of leaves and physiological changes. That's a pretty interesting one. So the aster plant, actually, it traps again, it's got a hairy kind of leaf to it, and it traps the particulates and prevents additional dispersion of the pollutants, but at cost to themselves. Oh, see, that's so sad. So when it's not at cost to the plant, then it's great. But you'll actually see that it will be at cost to the cells as the leaves start to yellow. So what I try to do, I want to protect them, is when the leaves start to turn yellow, I think, say thank you very much to the plant. I take off the leaf and dispose of it so that it's not trying to support a leaf that's already done its work. I have a real thing about that. You know, obviously, plants, I believe the same thing with animals. They don't understand our language, whatever language you're speaking. But language has a vibrational frequency. Your thoughts have a vibrational frequency. And I believe that both plants and animals pick up on that vibrational frequency. So if you come to them with an attitude of appreciation and gratitude, every time I harvest, which is like now every friggin' day, harvest the gardens, I'm forever thanking the plants for producing what they produce so that we can eat. I have a strong belief, and I don't think that's flaky at all. I think it has to do with the vibrational frequency, and that they respond to that vibrational frequency, which is why some people have an incredible green thumb, as they call it, because they walk through the garden and they talk to their plants and they have a communion on a vibrational frequency. To give you an example, the plants are far more receptive than us on that vibrational frequency. You could have an acre of land and in one corner you can introduce a pathogen, and immediately in microseconds the far corner from that will start producing immune components. It's amazing. They have a ability to communicate on vibrational frequencies that we don't have, typically don't have access to, just like animals. So, you know, again, it's not just people. We need to watch our thoughts and make sure that we're projecting positive thoughts to people and to ourselves. And not only does it have an impact on other people, but even on our own immune system. People that are positive and happy and uplifting and supportive and encouraging have a phenomenal vibrational frequency that supports their whole entire system and, of course, attracts people to them. So keep that in mind. It's not just plant, it's us too. Okay, the next one is white birch, Petula pendula, also called silver birch. And it's a potent accumulator of heavy metals as well. It takes up a variety of metals from the soil and the air. Again, the leaf is a waxy leaf as opposed to a hairy leaf. It can also trap particulates, which often wash into the soil after the rain. But the particulates can stay in the waxy surface of the leaves and thereby protect the plant. They're also really good with fungus. They will, when they're under stress from heavy metals, which aid the metal uptake, they can form a fungus. And again, just like the aster family. And the aster family, when the yellow, the leaves turn yellow, in the white birch, if you see the leaf go moldy, you want to take it off and don't put it into recycling. Do not put it in to composting. You want to put it away in the garbage. They've done their job and you want to thank them very much. Help them out and take it away. You don't want it to compost. Okay, now as opposed to a silver birch, we have a silver bush. And that has small leaves with, again, the fine hairs. It makes it great for capturing those particulates. Green walls can introduce high amounts of vegetation in a vertical space for improving air quality. And species are, this particular species, your silver bush, is well suited to green wall planting. I'm going to do a whole article. I just love green walls, especially the ones that produce harvest. There's all kinds that they do with various different types of IVs and what have you that look great, but the ones that can actually produce harvest are even better. Okay, then we have the euphorbia. It's another metal herb accumulator. It takes up lead and arsenic, among other contaminants, and it's fantastic for warding off herbivores. Can take up a small amount of nitrogen oxide. You'll find it often on the roadside as a weed, and it takes up even higher levels of pollutants there. So there you've got just the first few. Now, I took all of these out of an article on the website called airblissplus.com, Air Pollution, How to Create an Air Quality Garden. So we'll go over this from time to time. It's a fantastic article if you want to go. It's got nice pictures and everything else in there. I just took the first few off of that article to go over to show you that there's a number of plants that can absorb various pollutants from the air, as well as the ones that we have that resist various pathogens and what have you. There's also, and I can't remember it, I'm going to have to bring it up next time. There's a gentleman who has designed various tools, equipment, parameters, and helps you to, there's the YouTube I saw on this, on how to protect from the chemtrails, if you believe in the chemtrails. And I keep saying that because a lot of people believe that it's just hearsay, that it's another conspiracy theory, etc., whereas others have done laboratory tests and claim that, yes, definitely there is. So I've never done laboratory tests on it. I'll leave it up to you whether or not you believe in it. I think we do have a lot of chemtrails, but that's my own personal belief. Now, because of that, taking this a step further and going over what we've talked about a few times now, I've also, not just because of pollutants in our atmosphere and chemtrails, et cetera, but because we're having a food shortage internationally. It was part of the pandemic, along with fuel, with food, and, of course, finances. They were addressing all components, all pillars of society around the world. And so we're starting to see the shortages come, different things at different times. I think they're trying to get us used to it, kind of like the frog in the hot water, getting used to the water as it gets hotter and hotter and hotter until it dies. That's the type of marketing that we've been exposed to for the last couple of years. So not only are the prices going up tremendously, we've seen prices go 3 and 4 times what they were before, even a year ago or 2 years ago, but we're seeing less and less. So, you know, I've been promoting growing your own garden. Get rid of the grass. Grow a garden, for crying out loud. Grow berry bushes, fruit trees. Raise garden beds. I don't care how you get your garden in there, but grow your own fruit and vegetables, because then you know it's not toxic. It's nutrient dense rather than toxicity dense. And, of course, the last couple of years, we've been really, really pushing growing your own food because of this whole pandemic process and what they're orchestrating. So we've heard in some documentation that there's 39 different food units that have been burnt just in North America alone, and now it's going to the Netherlands and to Europe as well. And, of course, we've seen how they've tried to attack the poultry, the cattle as well, and the hogs. So what do we want to do? Well, we've been growing a variety of different systems, showing you how to do different systems in your garage. If you can grow food in the garage, you can grow it in a spare bedroom, in a bathroom, you know, kitchen sink, kitchen, not necessarily the sink, anywhere in the household. So we've been really, really pushing for that. Now, we're using different types of grow lights. We're using different depths. We're using, you know, companion growing, intensity growing, and we're using sequential growing. So all the different components, depending on the root depth, some roots like to be, you know, to go in the ground, you need them like 24 inches deep, whereas others are very superficial. So how to combine them in different ways is incredibly important. And so please start thinking about how you want to grow your own food in the winter. In the meantime, think about what you want to plant in the fall to protect your produce throughout the winter months. We don't grow quite so much, but getting prepared for the following spring. Okay, I hope you got some information out of this. I hope you go and do your own research. I say again and again, you know, my favorite clients are the ones that go and do research and come back with questions. If I can't answer them, that's great. It pushes me to go and do more research again. But I always encourage everyone, don't just take anybody, mine or anybody else's word for it. Go do your own research, regardless of what the issue is. Feel what feels good for you, what hits a chord for you, and follow through with that. I think that's it for today. We're early. I thought we were going to be late today. But here we got it all through quite early. So my thoughts for the week are think well, eat well, exercise well, sleep well, be well. You know what the indicators of good health are now. You know what the different systems are in the body. Brief definition. I'm sure you all had some idea before, but we went a little bit further perhaps. I'm giving you the indicators of good health. We want everybody to be in good health. The better health you are, the better you're able to resist all the crap that they're shooting out into the atmosphere or into you or your neighbors with the jab, with the shedding, with all the other kinds of issues that we need to take care of. And the better capable you will be of dealing with all the stress and anxiety that this whole world chaos is promoting. Now, and just keep in mind, many, many people, different organizations for different reasons say we've already won the war. It might get worse before it gets better, but we've ultimately already won the war. So keep that in mind, hold to that, keep that focus, and let's work towards preparing for the outcome being even better than it ever was before. Okay, so on that note, have a great day, great week, and we'll talk with you next week. Take good care. Bye-bye. Oh, I should also say I'm Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness. If you want to go to my website, choicesunlimited.ca, I've said this many times, I've taken 980-plus articles off because I don't want to get tagged. I don't go on to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, et cetera. I haven't gone on to them for years because they're too involved in criminal activity, too many class action lawsuits against them, so you don't find me doing anything there. But I also have another site, drhollybooks.com, just DR, and that's where you can get my books. The editor is finishing off one book, starting another, and preparing the structure for me to do a third. The third one is I'm working on, it's all her fault. We'll blame the editor for that. It's called, at this point, we're calling it The Vaccine Journey. And it's a novel. Again, a novel, but it's loaded with information and references and what have you that you can look at as you're reading through it. So that one is still in process, and she's working. The one that is coming up is a novel. Oh, my goodness. I can't think of what it was. I just drew a blank. The second one, that's too funny. The second one that I am doing is, or she is doing, is, was already done, was on Tom's book. And it's the book that he wrote when he crossed over. And, Cerebral Palsy, that's what the first book. We're finishing off Cerebral Palsy. The second one she's going to, basically I didn't write. It was just a transcription of what Tom gave me as he crossed over and what he went through. So that should be real easy and fast. And then the third one we'll be working on finishing is Vaccine Journey. Okay, so that's it. I'm Dr. Holly once again. We'll say goodbye. Hope you have a great week and talk with you next week. Take care.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.